All right. Well, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about sex and gender. I'm going to try and lay a foundation for us here before next week we'll talk more deeply and in depth kind of about transgenderism and what does that mean and what does the Bible say about that and what does our culture say about that. But before we get there, I thought it would be more helpful to start more broadly. Too often we can just start in trying to, you know, fight with, okay, well, what you're saying is wrong and here's why, without saying, well, what do I believe? Well, not that, but okay, well, what do you think? So that's what I'm trying to do here, is kind of build a foundation for us to then deal with that there. So just some introductions, place to remember, where I've tried to remind us every single time is that, you know, again, all people, regardless of their sex or their gender, or their male or female, or believer or unbeliever, are made in the image of God. Period, the end. That's not something you gain. It's not something you lose. It's something God gives you. It's part of the essence of what it means to be human. So it's good for us to remember that. So then some definitions here. When we're talking about sex, sex refers to the biological component or physical components of being male or female, like your reproductive organs or your chromosomes. So really the biological ness that makes you male or makes you female. That's what we mean, or what I'm going to mean tonight when I'm talking about sex. And then gender is slightly distinctive, or we're talking about something different at least when we're doing that, especially our culture is. So gender would then refer to the characteristics of one's sex, including the norms, behaviors, roles, or any kind of other socially constructed ideas of what does that mean to be a male or what does it mean to be a female. So there's kind of this distinction here between your biological sex and then your gender or your gender identity, which then what does that mean when people say that, is kind of an individual's internal sense of self, is what that should read in your notes, which may or may not align with your biological sex. So this is kind of an important, helpful clarification to make, because most people, and we'll get into this more next week, not tonight too much, but when most people are talking about being transgender, what they mean is that they're not saying that there's different sexes, but they are saying there may be more different genders, or that their gender does not line up with what their biological sex is. And so this is kind of the distinction that they're making, and so it's helpful to know what people are saying. And so then this kind of leads to a big question, which we'll dive into more next week, but I'm going to try and show you what I think the Bible has to say a little bit is, you know, what really determines who we are? Is it our biological sex, or is it our internal gender identity, which may or may not align with what our biological sex is? And if it doesn't, then which wins? And so your answer to that, that's kind of at the core of the question of what people are getting at. And so part of two, what I think we need to do, where we'll spend a lot of time talking tonight, is kind of gender identity. And I think we as Christians especially need to examine, well, what is our view of what gender is? Do we really have a biblical view of gender? It's easier to think that, right? Well, I'm a Christian, I like the Bible, so obviously I've got it right. I must have a good biblical view. Or is there some parts of the way that we view gender too that is also cultural? Maybe we have different cultural assumptions than other culture. When you're thinking of the culture, you think, no, well, they have that, but not me. But part of my argument is going to be, I think that we have more of a cultural view of gender than we want to admit as well. So that's a little bit where we're going. But to begin talking kind of about sex, again, I'm just going to relate a lot of this to be made in the image of God. So our biological sex is part of what it means to be human. If it did not, God wouldn't have made us that way. And God intentionally, right, in Genesis 1:27, when he makes male and female, he makes them intentionally, not just one, he makes both of them. And together we both bear the image of God, and there is something I think that is essential there. So then our sexed bodies, so thinking about our very bodies having a sex, that's part of what it means to bear God's image. If it didn't, then God wouldn't have made us that way. He would have made us a different way. And so the fact and the way that God has constructed human beings as they are, that is part of what it means to be made in God's image. If we were all, I don't know, monkeys or fish, and God said that's God's image, then what that is would be significant, but it's not. That he made male and female, and that is how he decided to do it. It's also significant to note when It says male and female in Genesis 1:27. That word that's being used there in the Hebrew 2, it's also then later used when Noah is talking about the male and female animals that are coming on the ark. So there it seems particularly to be thinking about our biological identity. Some other things, it's significant to note. 1 Corinthians 6 is kind of a key one. We've referenced this passage a number of times kind of throughout this series. Our bodies, our sex bodies, are holy temples. And the fact that we have bodies and that we have temples and the kind of sex that we are seems to determine how we are supposed to live with those bodies and how we are to act with them, right? We talked about this the last 2 weeks when we've talked about homosexuality, and there where we say and believe, well, the kind of sex that God made you and gave you determines what you are allowed to do with your body, because it's not yours. You are not your own, but you belong to God. So that's a lot of what Paul argues in 1 Corinthians 6, and he relates all of 1 Corinthians 7 and what God says about sexuality back to, well, your body is God's temple. It needs to be holy. You need to do things with it that are holy. So that is part of this as well. There's also Jesus. He seems to think that Genesis 1 through 2, that creation, the foundation of Adam and Eve and marriage, as still being important today. He doesn't just say, well, that was way back then. That was just myth. It was made up. But, you know, we know better now. Here's what we can do. When he's asked questions about divorce and marriage in Matthew 19, he goes back to Genesis 1 and 2 and says, well, what does it say there? Because that is foundational and that's still applicable and has something to say in this discussion. So if Jesus thought it was still relevant then, I don't think we can now say, well, Jesus, you know, that was then. We know better than Jesus now, so Genesis 1 isn't relevant anymore. Now, if Jesus thought it was relevant then, I'm happy to say it's still relevant now. I don't want to disagree with Jesus pretty much ever. There's also significant places. The only time that the Bible seems to talk about anything related to gender necessarily. It specifically prohibits cross-dressing in one place in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 22:5 does so, where there's a number of various laws, which, I mean, even the Old Testament law that can give you plenty of discussions anyway, but Deuteronomy 22:5 says, a woman should not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord. And then there's a number of other things that are found here, but also significant to note, Deuteronomy 22, there is a lot of laws also later about sexual immorality and the kind of conduct that is and is not acceptable. And many of those principles, well, pretty much all of those laws are still applicable for Christians today. And even if every Old Testament law, that's a side trail I'm not going to go down, but every Old Testament law, the principle behind it is still applicable today. We just might apply it slightly differently. It's not, oh, we don't have to obey what Jesus wanted back then anymore. But so that's there. You also have 1 Corinthians 11. Preached on that a while back if you weren't here for that. That is the passage that mentions head coverings. And Paul says that women are supposed to wear head coverings in worship. I don't see any head coverings here, so we don't do that. I'm not going to re-preach that sermon, but what's important to see there is Paul seems to think that it is significant that women are dressing a certain way differently than men are in the service, and that has something to do with worship. So it's not something that goes away in the New Testament, even though it somewhat changes. Again, that's another deep hole I'm not going down. But these are just some of the issues to keep in mind. Romans 1, this is a passage we've talked about a couple times the past couple weeks. One of the things that mentions particularly is Romans 1 seems to prohibit same-sex relations. Well, it doesn't seem to. I think that it does. And one of the reasons that it does that, not the only reason, but one of them is that it is violating the natural sex distinctions. Right? So when he says this, in Romans 1, it's 26 through 27, if you're unfamiliar with those verses. It says, for the women exchanged natural relations with those that are contrary to nature, and men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. Again, there's a lot more. I don't want to rehash all of those. There's more reasons that is not seen as okay. But one of the reasons then is, well, you are going against your biological sex, and that is what is natural, and you should know that God has told you to do that, and so you shouldn't be violating. That is part of it. We also see the incarnation of Jesus proves, I think, that our biological sex matters. If it didn't, Jesus wouldn't have been male, or he wouldn't have had a particular gender. He would have been genderless or something other than exactly human, right? What does it mean to be human? Part of what it means to be human is to have a sex, and Jesus had one. He was male, right? So that's part of it. It's also, it seems like biological sex will last in the resurrection, not procreating, but being male and being female will last in the resurrection, because in Jesus' resurrection, he still has a, he has a glorified body, but his body still is in many ways the same. He still has scars, physical markings that he did before. It also still appears, we have no reason to think that he is not no longer male anymore. And too, right, male and female were created in the garden, and it was good. It was not bad. It was not something that was created by sin that God is trying to get rid of. It is something that we believe will remain in the new creation. The Gnostics believed that it wouldn't. They believed that women, if they were really holy, would get to turn into men so they could go to heaven, because women don't get to go to heaven, and the Gnostic idea of the gospel. Okay, so that's a little bit there on that. Again, I think we need a little bit better of a vision. So the Bible, it doesn't really seem to appear to teach any kind of distinction between sex or gender, especially because this is really a more modern idea. If you talked about this to, you know, Moses or Noah or King David, they might have been pretty confused and know, well, what are you talking about? I don't understand. Now, that doesn't mean the Bible doesn't have anything to say about it, but it does mean you have to be more careful when you're reading it and studying it. You can't take your assumptions or any of our assumptions into the text if it's not interested in answering certain questions you're asking. So you've got to study harder, which is generally true. We also see there are lots of characters in the Bible. I didn't go through all of them, but Jesus is one who often defy gender stereotypes. We like Jesus getting down, stripping, and washing his disciples' feet. That was, you know, that's not some, especially today, that's not really something we would think is being super manly or masculine. I don't think there's a lot of, you know, men's conferences, that's what they're doing. But you have another of other examples, David dancing around naked in worship to the Lord, or mostly naked, indisposed, I don't know. And if you look at it too, this is kind of the big thing. There's really not that many biblical commands that are only given to one gender. Okay, the Bible's a really big book. There's not one book that says, okay, this is the men's book. Okay, this is the women's book. So you guys do that one. I don't have to do that. Good. And I've got to do this one. Don't worry about this one. I'll handle that. Or, you know, New Testament's for men, Old Testament's for women. That's not what the Bible does. There are a few, but not that many. So my real center question I have here when it comes to gender, which is really just thinking about, well, what does it mean to be male or female, is kind of what I mean in this question, is, well, what if our vision of that was just centered on Jesus? If instead of trying to figure out based on culture or stereotypes, what does it mean to be a man or woman? Well, why don't we just look at Jesus? How about we figure that out? And that what I don't mean is that our discipleship, it's not androgynous, or that there's no difference between male and female at all. But we both are male or female, right? But we still are both being formed into Christ's image. All of us are trying to be like Jesus. And now how that might work might be slightly different, but we're still heading towards the same goal. So why don't we do that? And I think that we can rightly recognize some gender stereotypes that, hey, this is just a stereotype. This is not what it means. I have to do this thing in order to be a man. Or we can reject even some culture or gender expectations without having to reject our biological sex or see any kind of incongruence between them. I think we can do that. I can do that. I don't know. So, well, what does it mean to be, what's biblical manhood? What does it mean to be a biblical man? And really maybe a better question, I think it's a better question, is to ask, is there a distinct kind of Christian man? Okay, not just what's biblical, but is there a way of being a man as a follower of Jesus that differs from the way that the world or a non-Christian would be a man? So I think there probably should be. There's not, I don't really know why you're calling it biblical anyway. Let's just call it being a man, I guess. I don't know if I have the perfect, great answer to this question. I studied hard. But I don't fully know what to do here. The best one that I've got or definition I can think of is that a biblical man is just a biological male who acts like Jesus in his specific context. That's pretty good. I'm happy to sit, well, acts like Jesus. It's also going to, spoilers, it's going to be my definition of what it means to be a woman, too. But part of what this means is, I think, and I've seen this, maybe you've seen this too, a lot of churches seem to just slap some Bible verses on stuff, like our culture expectations, and call it biblical, which we do that with a lot of things. I've got an argument, I've got an idea, let me go find a verse that agrees with me. I'm not going to read the verse after it, the verse before it. I've never read this book of the Bible before. I don't even know who's saying this, but I'm going to slap it on something and call it good. That's what it means to be a biblical male. My favorite one is the, you know, there's a verse in Genesis where it says, hell, the Lord watch over us, you know, when we're apart from each other. And you see that slapped on a mug or something pretty. It's actually a curse. So, you know, there's things that you get in trouble when you do stuff like this. So I don't think you can just go through and see, hey, where's, you know, where's men doing stuff? Ah, that's what it means to be a biblical male. Well, maybe it's not something you should do. And so really the only primary male-specific Bible verses, I think, is the qualification for elders. That we see in 1 Timothy and Titus. Some would throw in deacons as well, but I think there's also the word that says deaconesses, so it seems like there's a list of women requirements to be deacons as well. So I think elders is really the only one that you can go to say this is what men should be. But it also still contains attributes that all Christians should aspire to. It doesn't mean, oh, good, you don't have to be gentle anymore. Oh, you don't have to be above reproach because that's just for men. Well, no, but for men who want to be elders, this is a requirement. So things like, you know, I just went for some of the stereotypes, you know, shooting guns, enjoying sports, eating steak, you know, those aren't necessarily inherently male activities, and I certainly don't think that they are inherently Christian male activities. But if you looked at some men's Bible study materials or men's Bible conference, or if you just typed in biblical manhood, you would find a lot of this kind of stuff to say, this is what it means to be a biblical male. Which, I just don't know how you can do that. Especially, well, let's look at Jesus. I don't think Jesus shot a lot of guns. Fairly confident. You can check your Hebrew on, you know, on that one for me, Rob. Don't know if he really played any sports. So how can you say that if your definition of biblical manhood doesn't fit Jesus, you probably should change your definition. Not, you know, go hunting for more Bible verses. So then biblical womanhood, I kind of have the same basic idea. I think a biblical woman is a biological female who acts like Jesus in her specific context. There's probably particular ways that's going to work out differently than it will for men, but I'm not comfortable to say, this is what it must be, because then that's when you can get into legalism or trouble. So I'm being a little cautious here. Proverbs 31 is kind of the main place if you're looking at, hey, what does it mean to be a biblical woman? I'm sure there's plenty of, you know, female Proverbs 31 ministry stuff. You've probably heard more studies on that, ladies, than you'd ever like to again. But also when you look at it too, it doesn't sound like the stereotypical biblical woman stereotypes we usually hear, because that woman works in the fields, and she's working in the marketplaces, and she's making stuff, and she's running the household, which when you read the whole context and think about then too, household in, you know, ancient Israel means something a little different than 1950s housewife. It more meant running the business of the farm and all of the hired hands and all of the people who worked there and all of the buying and selling. So there's a lot that's kind of going on there. I tend to think, I don't necessarily think Proverbs 31 is just talking about a woman there. I think it's actually just wisdom personified. When you look at Proverbs and you read it all the way through, folly and wisdom are both portrayed as women throughout the whole book, and they're personified in certain ways. So there's some of this. I could be wrong, but I'm not the only person who thinks this, so I'm at least not crazy. It seems like Proverbs 31 could just be talking about this is what wisdom looks like. Wisdom putting on flesh, walking around, here's what it is. Especially because if you try and do everything that Proverbs 31 woman does, I don't think there's enough time in the day to do all of that. The only other passages that you have that seem to be women specific, other than the ones I'm not really going to mess with again on head coverings, is women are commanded in 1 Peter 3, 1 Timothy 2, to dress with modesty. And when you read those two, the modesty there doesn't seem to be concerning dressing to not be sexual. It seems to be more concerned with not wearing expensive clothes and jewels or braiding your hair. So modesty, it's not to say that that's fine. I'm not saying that. Don't hear that. But it is a little more, it's a different context. It's saying don't be wearing all sorts of, you know, the fanciest stuff that you can find. That's the only, those, and that's kind of it. It's a big book. Bible's huge. There's not a ton of stuff to work with here when you're trying to think through, okay, what does it necessarily mean? And so again, I just think our vision of whatever biblical womanhood and biblical manhood is, it needs to be a lot better than just cultural stereotypes. And so, two, part of the problem, and maybe before I get into this, part of why I care about this too is because this kind of stuff can be damaging. When we start to tell people, this is what a biblical man looks like. You must do these things. If you don't fit it, if you don't start to fit what that is, then it starts to lead to confusion. Really, okay, am I not really a man? Okay, because I don't fit a lot of male stereotypes, to be honest. I mean, I've shot a lot of guns. I really don't care about it that much. It's kind of like fireworks. It's just, I feel like I'm just wasting money every time I pull the trigger because, wow, that was $4, okay. I mean, it was kind of fun, but kind of like that my $4 back, so I don't know if I really want to do that again. But, you know, then growing up in church and going to these male things, oh, no, this is what it means. Like, well, I don't really like this. I kind of don't want to be outside. It's hot. I just want to sit inside and read a book. Okay, does that mean I'm not a man? Oh, and then the way that Christians, especially, you hear people say, oh, well, you must be gay. I'm like, great. Well, now I'm worrying about that. Maybe I am. Because I don't fit what you are saying about what being a biblical man is. And then when I go and read my Bible, it doesn't say anything about any of that junk. So maybe that's not exactly what it means. So I think this it plays into some of that stuff. That's why I think it's significant. It's not nothing. I think it's a stereotype. It doesn't mean that if you like that, you're not a man. Most men do, but some don't. Stereotypes don't fit everybody. So what about marriage, too? This is part of the issue is that a lot of our ideas about gender, at least as I've seen, tend to center around marriage. When they talk about what does it mean to be a man, what does it mean to be a woman, they almost always go to marriage in Ephesians 5 and say, well, husbands lead, women submit. Really what they mean, too, is, well, men lead and women submit. And that's what it means to be a man, is I'm in charge and woman listen to me. Okay, well, there's a lot of issues with that, other than the fact I don't think you're understanding Ephesians 5 very well. You need to read it again. Is it ends up ignoring those who are unmarried and makes it seem as if men and women's primary function is just hierarchical. I'm not going to try and say that again. Makes it seem as if that is it. God made us, and what it means to be man is to be in charge, and you're not in charge. And that is core of what it means to be human. That doesn't seem like what it means in Genesis. Now, that doesn't mean there's not some of that that's true, but I think our vision of manhood and womanhood needs to be a lot greater than that. Because then if you're not married, you can't fit this. Well, how do you do it? I don't know how you do it. Figure it out. Just get married. That's how a lot of churches end up talking to people, which I don't think is helpful. I also think, too, whatever our vision is going to be, I think it needs to be applicable to every country and every generation. And by that, I mean every generation's past and generations in the future, too. If you're going to say, this is it, you must do X in order to be a man of God. You must do this in order to be a woman of God. Well, if that doesn't work, if Jesus didn't do it, then that's not very good. Okay, if you can't go back 1,000 years and men weren't doing it, well, that's not very good either. Because the stereotypes change. The culture changes. Okay, what it meant to be a man 1,000 years ago is very different than what it means to be a man today. That doesn't mean that was right and today is wrong. It doesn't mean today is right and back then was wrong. It could be. But our vision's got to be bigger than that. It needs to be better. Otherwise, all we're doing is we're just passing along, you know, particular cultural applications, especially if it's just something unique to our country here. And maybe another country has a very different view of what men and women do, which a lot do. Now, some things we look at, oh, no, it's not very manly at all. And they think, well, what you're doing is not manly. To be a man here is to do this. And so that's when some of this just gets sticky and complicated. And I don't know if I'm ending up giving you a much better vision, but my vision really is just Jesus. I'm still trying to figure the rest of it out, but I figure if I can just try and be a man like Jesus, once I master that, maybe I can try and chase the other stuff. But I'm still figuring that part out. So kind of Christian responsibility on some of this, what does all this mean? And this will apply, I might say this again next week when we talk more about transgender stuff, is that, you know, I really don't think our job as Christians is to fight some culture war, but to proclaim the gospel and love lost people. What does it really mean if we convert, and really what does it matter? If the whole world converts to biblical values, which is just a buzzword and meaningless 90% of the time, maybe 90% is too high, often it's meaningless. What does it mean if the whole world does that and then they never embrace Jesus? What's it mean if you embrace, if you gain the world and you lose your soul? That's the goal. Okay? So they're still lost. And so I don't really care if somebody doesn't embrace what I think. You know, here's what a biblical man means if they're not embracing Jesus. I want them to figure that out first. Maybe we can chase other stuff later. And so then I think we as Christians too, this is really my main argument, I guess, is just that we need to closely examine whatever we think our expectations of what being a man or a woman is and ask, well, is this distinctly Christian or is it just cultural? Right? Because, and again, I think we can, my fear is that our visions of gender are often more influenced by the culture than we want to admit. And I've noticed this more with my boys, just being little. And the way that people will sometimes respond to certain things, or that I'll respond to certain things. Like, Calvin will go through phases where he wants to wear scrunchies in his hair, right? Because he's got a big box of scrunchies, and mom wears a scrunchie. He goes, oh, I want to wear a scrunchie. And so there can be, oh, no, scrunchies are women. No, son, don't do that. This is horrible. And, oh, why would you let him do it? He's just a two-year-old who wants to be like his mama and wear it. And so, sure, son, yeah, cool. Here, can I wear one too? I'll try and put one in my hair. And that's it, you know. Is that being a biblical man? I think so. I don't think I'm ruining my kid by letting him wear a scrunchie. I think I might be ruining him if I start freaking out about stuff and making it, no, this is way more important. He says his favorite color is purple. Great. I don't know why. Who cares? You know? No, purple's a female color. What does it matter? Maybe in 100 years it won't be. It'll be a male color. It used to be the color of royalty. I think King David probably wore a lot of purple. Maybe that was before his time. I don't know. Anyway. That's just my fear, is that too often I think that our vision is not really based on the Bible as much as it is just based on the culture around us. And what we don't necessarily think is the culture, because culture is just the air it's the air you breathe. You don't notice it. We notice other people's cultures when it's distinct, but we don't always notice how our culture is, not necessarily as biblical as we think it is. But so that's basically my thing. If you can come up to me and you can show me in the Bible what it means, no, being a man, being a woman means this, and here's where you can see it, great. Then I'll believe you. I can follow you there. But I don't see as much in Scripture that clearly tells us specific things. But it does seem to say that there's a difference. Somehow. We'll get into more of that next week. But so that's an attempt, at least, to kind of briefly talk a little bit about sex and gender and at least lay some groundwork for where we'll be at next week. Any questions? Something I can clarify? You can ask me later if I really made a mess of something. But let me pray for us. Lord, I thank you for who you are. I thank you that you made us. Lord, that you made us male and female, and that was your idea from the beginning. That's not a result of the fall. That is something that was perfect in the Garden of Eden, and is something that will remain perfect in heaven. Lord, I pray that you will help all of us in this room, that we would be followers of Jesus, that we would be who you made us to be, that we would fulfill that and follow you in the way that we can in our own specific context, be that whether we're really manly men or maybe less manly than others, but ultimately we would be men of Jesus. And the same goes for those who are women. Lord, I just ask that we would love you, that we'd be more like your son. We pray this in your holy and precious name. Amen. All right. Thanks for being here.